Honourable members, let me take this opportunity to call the meeting to order. I remember about 3 members will be joining us from another meeting, but that doesn't stop us to resume our meeting here. They will find us because there are a number of things that we have to do today. And let me also welcome the department for with Department of Home Affairs, which is coming to make a presentation on POTS this morning. Honourable members, you are welcome. We have received an apology from the Minister, Deputy Minister, and the DG. They are playing a role also in the BRICS. They are, I understand they will be making some presentations or chairing in other meetings in the BRICS. So that's why they are not here with us. We know that they normally attend this meeting. They don't avoid us, please. So that means we can start with our meeting by... I hope members, you all have the agenda that says we have briefing from the Department of Home Affairs, consideration of and adoption of committee second term program. Is it the same one? Also the minutes. That's the agenda that we have just renewed here. Okay, on that note, members, let me take this opportunity. I'm sure we, just for purposes of recording, can we introduce ourselves quickly so that we know one another. I'm Nomo Ndekaplene from Northwest Province, the chairperson of this committee.
Sorry,
I'm Shudi from the Eastern Province. Then.
Willem Fader, I'm from the Northern Cape Province. Thank you.
Okay. Yes.
Clifford Mahajan, Department of Home Affairs.
Okay.
Jacob Mamavula, Chief Director of Port Control, Department of Home Affairs.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'm Jackie McKay. I'm Deputy Director General with the Department of Home Affairs.
Okay, thanks very much, Honourable Members. Okay. Okay, let me take this opportunity to allow the Department to make presentation, to start with the presentation. Honourable Mr. McKay, over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning once again. With me is Mr. Mamabolo, who is the Chief Director of the Ports of Entry with the Department of Home Affairs, and he will be taking us through the presentation, and we will take questions after the presentation. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Can I proceed with your permission, Chair?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. Yes, Mr. McKay, I'll be making a presentation that we have prepared for this meeting. And the table of contents will do a brief introduction, reflect on the strategic challenges, which will include legislative challenges, security threats, trade and movement of goods. Then we'll deal with operational matters. Look at the demand for port services, operational capacity, which will speak to all those items on human resources, IT, business process, infrastructure, stakeholder relations. Then we will take what are the things that we will be doing to resolve the issues identified, and those are our strategic interventions. We will share with the committee our experiences and lessons learned from the festive period of the December, which also includes the AFCON, or included the AFCON Cup. Then we'll talk to the way forward, and that will conclude the presentation. On the introduction, the very first point we're making is that South Africa has a total of 72 designated ports of entry. That number includes 10 airports, 9 ports in the maritime border. This means our harbors, and 53 land ports. And of course, we also include Waterkloof Air Force, which is used for normally to receive heads of state. So these are this is the breakdown of all the ports of entry that we have in the country. And of course, we have we share a number of ports of entry with 6 countries. Those listed there, the Lesotho, Swaziland, and so on and so on. we are making a point here, Chair, in the introduction very early, and this is a hypothetical statement we are making. It can be challenged, but our view is that when you look at where ports of entry are currently, the current state, it points out to the fact that as a country, not only the Department of Home Affairs, but as a country, we still grappling, we have not done very well to deeply appreciate and understand the strategic role of ports of entry. And this is for the country, for the continent and region. So we are making a claim that this is a matter that has been neglected for a very long time now, and we do have some points to prove and demonstrate that this is a very complex matter for the country. All of us have not yet had our effective control on this, and we've not yet deeply understood the complexity of the nature of ports of entry and their importance, not only for South Africa, but the SADC region and the whole continent. Now, that leads to a number of problems, and that's the point I was making, that if you look at ports of entry, the quality of the services that we provide to travelers who come in and out of the country, the standard and quality of services is not up to scratch. We experience congestion at ports of entry, particularly during the festive period. It will be the case now with Easter, when we have major events like the World Cup, AFCON. We normally experience long queues. We have a problem of illegal entry by foreigners. We have a huge number of illegal migrants in the country. The current state of port facilities leaves much to be desired. They are not in a good condition. And this is the point that we are making, that a country could do far much better to pay attention to these very important parts of our work. What are some of the key and strategic challenges that we face in port of entry? The first point to make is to note that a port of entry is declared by the Minister of Home Affairs, and this is provided for in the Immigration Act. So all ports of entry are designated by the Minister of Home Affairs. With regard to legislation, we think the part in the Immigration Act that facilitates the entry and departure of people, to some extent, we think the provisions in the Act are adequate. Obviously, every legislation could be improved, could be made better, but we think at this point, it is not so much of a problem. The issue is, even with the current Act, we lack capacity to implement it as a department. We are operating far below the capacity requirements to run ports of entry efficiently and effectively. And this includes both the horizontal coordination, the vertical coordination with sister departments, even internally within Home Affairs in the immigration units. The coordination with some of the internal units needs to be improved. So this is more about implementation of the various provisions of the Act as opposed to improving the Act itself. So if we were to have capacity to implement the Act, that would be far much better. And of course, coordination with other departments, I've made that point, it's a very big challenge, and as we move forward, we will demonstrate that issue. Moving forward with some of the strategic challenges, those that poses a risk to national security, to security of the country, will include the following. With a movement of people and goods, we do have a challenge of people that travel with documents that are illegally acquired, fraudulent, illegal documents, and by this we mean passports. There are a number of people that use fraudulent passports to passport prevention, visas, and our permits. We do catch some of them, but this is a big challenge. These documents are used here to facilitate the movement of people, particularly trafficking of human beings, of children, of women. Normally they use these legal documents for human and child trafficking. The smuggling of drugs, illicit activity, contraband goods, and dangerous weapons. And this is very much important, especially in the maritime space, in the sea, in the harbors. That's where we are highly vulnerable with respect to some of these issues. Illegal immigration, which is unlawful entry and departure from the country. Our officials working with a whole range of syndicates, government departments, non-government employees, corruption in port of entry is a very big issue. It's a big problem. All this poses a serious threat to national security. With respect to the facilitation of the movement of goods, port infrastructure is a big problem, not only for goods, but also for people, tourism, travelers that are visiting our country, departing as visitors. So port infrastructure here was designed to meet the requirements of the previous period. There has not been investment in improving port infrastructure to meet the needs of post-1994 situation, and to meet the needs and expectations of the countries in the African continent with regard to trade, economic integration with the region, and so on and so on. So the road network entering the ports or moving out of the port is very tight, particularly land ports. That's a big issue, which impact on trade and some of these issues that I'm referring to. The rail infrastructure, we're not using adequately rail network to facilitate the movement of goods and people. Goods, yes, but currently we don't have rail that moves from South Africa into the neighboring states. They offload people, and this is because of problems related to clearance of people traveling by rail. It's a matter that we'll be paying attention to. There's a big potential, we believe there's a big potential in the region for labor, for skills, but our current situation with regard to immigration and port of entry does not easily facilitate that. The demand for port services reflects the following, and this is what we want to look at. What are the sources or what are the trends relating to demand for port services, facilitation of movement of people? The next slides that are coming will be based on our experiences during the 2012 festive period and the 2030 AFCON, African Cup of Nations. We used that period to test certain practices that we consider very good and efficient for the management of ports. And one of them is that we have introduced statistical methods to manage ports. We use data to manage ports of entry. In the past, we were just running ports of entry without appropriate and effective use of statistics that we generate. And this is a very important point because it will help us for proper planning, capacity, and understanding the environment in which we work. So we have introduced that method of statistical data management. And currently what we are doing is, because we have completed the design of that, we are now moving into understanding. If we have these statistics, what are the root causes? What does it tell us? How do we interpret, analyze it, and do follow up? How do we use it for planning? Our managers in the port of entry, they were. For example, they don't have a way of managing productivity per person in the port of entry. They don't have tools to deal with productivity and efficiency. And with this information that I'll be showing you, select slides, of course, not the whole of it, we think we will empower port managers to manage, to be able to know how many people did official X or immigration X did, and so on. That issue is very much important, and the next slide will deal with that. We are also talking to our IT, the IT unit branch, to help us with software and better technology to manage data, to manage information. And of course, management of trends and patterns is going to be a challenge moving forward. What are some of the slides that we selected for this meeting? We thought we should show to members, honorable members, the slides, just to get a sense of, in all the 72 ports of entry, what are the times when ports are busy? At which time, all of them, and this is average data, there could be some ports that are extremely busy at certain points, but all of them combined, this is the indication. The, just at the bottom, the zero, that is, those are hours, so zero will mean midnight, and 23 will mean 11 o'clock in the evening. So that indicates that midnight, early hours of the morning, ports of entry are not so busy. This point is critical for management, for allocation of resources, for design of shifts. When do you put more of your people? So ports of entry are busy basically between 6 o'clock in the morning and 9 p.m. That's when our ports are busy. There was a, inter-airports. Ports are busy international sites, normally in the morning. That has been the belief of the past years. But with this information we have learned, actually airports, land ports are busy throughout the day. It's not at certain points where we call the hour. Throughout during those hours, ports of entry are very busy. And of course, around midnight is when travel volumes are low. So this is important. We can do this for every port. But this is a combined slide. So we will be taking to every port manager this type of data for them to know when are they busy during the 7 days during the week for proper planning and management. What we are showing on this slide is we are also starting to manage what is called hits. And we selected the top 10 ports of entry. Top 10 by volumes, by the number of people that passes through those. OR Tambo, for example, is the busiest port in the country. It has the highest number of travelers, and it has the highest number of hits. What is a hit? A hit will be generated when there's an issue picked up with a traveler. This traveler could have overstayed. This traveler could be a wanted criminal. This traveler could, there could be issues with this traveler that make the system to generate what we call a hit. And then the immigration officer will pull the person to the side, do investigation, check what is the problem with the person. So the names of such people are listed on the movement control system, which is our technology to record the movements of people. A hit is a security issue, very big security issue. Ideally, the hit should be handled and resolved within fairly an hour. But we do see a trend in ports of entry where hits are left to run for a very long time. We are currently investigating why our managers not managing hits, because a case of a hit means there is a problem with the traveler, should be investigated and be resolved. So these are the slides we selected as of from the 1st January 2013 to just indicate what are the trends. So we want to make sure that hits are resolved to enhance national security. We thought it would be important to show honorable members which are the countries that are keeping us busy at the port of entry. Which are the countries that are putting a strain on our resources at the port of entry requiring our services. From non-party countries, the UK, the United States of America, these are the... So our country attracts mainly people from the UK, the US, Germany, those big countries that we have a big number of travelers from non-party countries. Very important for our country to know this information. But we really attract people from the highly industrialized countries. And we thought we should show that. So which ones, again, the trend is the same. For departures, people leaving the country, the trend is the same. The UK, the US, Germany, as indicated. from SADC, members might be interested in SADC to know which countries in SADC have the highest travel numbers. And this is the transaction at the port of entry recorded. Lesotho, most people in the country will think that the biggest volumes that we manage will be from Zimbabwe, transaction of people that enter and depart. Lesotho, because it's landlocked in South Africa, and by the way, we have the highest number of ports with Lesotho. So this is a country that transacted out at ports of entry. Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Swaziland, and so on and so on, as listed there. This is important to know where to deploy your resources and where to focus, where to plan, and also if there's to be a change, to try to understand what are the reasons for that change in a particular period. So this is a trend we are monitoring. And of course, the SADC departures also indicate the same trend and all that. Now, on the next slide, what we are showing here is a graph which indicates the trend of traveler movements over the past 3 years, 2010, 2011, 2012. What has been the movement of people in departure and arrivals combined on this slide? You see the graph is fairly stable. We have calculated that the trend per annum average is about 3% per annum of the increase in the number of total travelers. You will see that the spikes are normally in April every year. That's because of the festive period. Also in June, July, that there's also a big increase of travelers coming to South Africa because of a change in weather conditions, particularly in Europe. And then, of course, December, the festive period, is the highest point in the year when we experience a huge spike in traveler volumes. And that exceeds Easter by far. I mean, that's the time when we're very busy. So this is a graph that we will be maintaining just to monitor the growth in the number of people coming to our country. The next two slides are very important for a comparative analysis. If you look at the arrivals, over the same period, the trend is consistent. And if you look at the numbers, a little bit higher. But I think, Chair, if I move to the next one, which is departures, we can show members a trend that would like them to observe, which is departures are very low. It points to a very low trend in departures. That tells us people come into the country and they don't depart. That's the general trend. So we have a lot of people that come but they don't leave. I mean, if you look at just to go back to the arrival, when you compare that to the departures, it tells you that we are a receiving country, but people stay. This should help the country to plan where should we be focusing, policing, our capacity to track and trace and follow up on people that come to the country. The change in documents and status and all that, what makes them to stay, is it good for the country, is it a risk, are they legal, you know, if their documents expire. There are a lot of things that you can analyze and look at. And then reposition your security function to manage that. Then we picked up again a sample of, and this is the point I was making, and what this slide tells us, Chair, is productivity per person at a port of entry. We now have capacity to tell. For example, in Baybridge, we know those top four officials that are listed there. On the 24th of February, they were the best, they were the hardest working officials. They have checked those numbers that are listed there, 1137, and of course going down. The officials in the 8th bridge in a day did 221 on average, and those ones at the top did 137. The lowest performers at Bay Bridge are listed there, some did 6 and all. But as I was saying, we've just started with this extraction of data and its quality and analysis. And we want managers at ports of entry to use this to do the analysis performance of their members. And I must qualify the slide by saying the highest, because we are still doing the analysis as I was saying, the highest performers may not point out to a positive practice, but could actually be a risk in the sense that some people share passwords and they use those to do their wrong things. So when a person is high, we shouldn't be happy, could be a reason for investigation. If average is 221, how did you do 1137? Could have allowed people that are security threats to our country to just walk in. So that might have to be investigated. It could be they are working hard. Some of the people below there could be supervisors that are manning the queues that go in help with one person. But at least we must account for every person. We should know, and this will tell us people that are not at work and so on and so forth. It's a plan that we want to give to port managers to use to manage, because currently they don't have that capacity or techniques to manage. There's another issue that we wanted to show to members, that there's an assumption that big ports of entry staff are the busiest. They are hardworking, they're faced with huge loads, workloads, and under pressure. The small ports, the people are not hardworking. So this is workload per port. For example, we took Bainbridge, which is our second biggest port of entry. Now comparing it with Kolela, which is a port in KwaZulu-Natal, with Swaziland, we just said, let's do a comparison. The line you see at the bottom is the number of immigration officials, the one with 53, 54, and end with 54, at the top on the 8th bridge. We are just comparing the total number of immigration of officers, how many did each process. So you'll see if we take the extreme right, 5 immigration officers in Kolela did 562, whilst their counterparts in Bainbridge, our biggest port of entry and had 64 people, did about 280 immigration officers. So that shows you that the workload actually, the people, it's possible the people in small ports are the ones that are overworked, because they are few. And the problem with this is, normally when you allocate personnel and resources, we allocate to the biggest ones, because we work on an assumption that they are under pressure. But in actual fact, the smallest ones, there are ports that are managed by one person, that are managed by two persons, where there's no home affairs at all, it's only subs. So if that port is busy that day, it means that official who's there, the only one who's facing that entire port. And that could actually be very strenuous for those people. And those are the ports that we neglect. We normally don't think of those officials in the isolated ports of entry. So this graph will help us on resource deployments and resource allocations. And it improves our management and better understanding of ports. Just operational issues, and I'll try to move past the chair, is that as I was saying when I started, that the capacity that is allocated of ports of entry has not been scientifically determined. We're functioning far below our capacity, and we're not providing standardized services. Controls at entry and departure gates is a function that we are not doing very well. When you enter a port of entry, there's a point where people enter, there's a point where people depart, and all that. Those places are supposed to be properly meant for immigration. When a person arrives at the gate, it's supposed to be the check. When a person exits on the other side, it's supposed to be there to check. Currently, it's done by SAPs. And in city ports, it's not done at all. In others, it's done casually. It's not a function that we do in very tight. What does that lead to? In city instances, a person just walks through a port of entry without anyone asking them. A car can just drive past a port of entry. Like we normally believe people enter the port illegally through the fence. Some of them just walk inside the port. We do have pictures which we could have thought, but this is true, and it's a big worry problem for us. It's a function that is not properly defined. Who actually is supposed to do that? Traffic control in and within the port radius, within the port of entry. When there are congestions at port of entry, That's when we experienced that this function of traffic control at port of entry is not allocated to anyone properly. The traffic department officials, they look at normal traffic violations, speed, license, driver license, all that. But to control traffic in a port of entry, where do people park? When there's a long queue, people not jumping the queues because you have narrow, tight road network. Traffic control, it can take the port, it can throw the port out of control. And this is a big problem. Immigration officers sit in their offices and wait to stamp passports. They don't do anywhere outside. Staff sit in their offices, police, view, time searches. So the issue of traffic control in airports is a weak link. Pedestrian facilities are not properly checked. Commercial clearance facilities as well. We have problems there of proper controls. The main building for passenger vehicles, the controls there. So these are functions we are supposed to be doing in airport offensive, but the stakeholders, these are grey areas amongst the stakeholders as to actually who should be doing that. And they cause serious risk. The other functions that we're not performing very well, Chair, because of capacity weaknesses. This speaks to what should be the skills and technical attributes of an immigration officer at a port of entry, or any official working at a port of entry. We don't have capacity to do traveler profiling. When people come with children, there could be traffickers of people, you should have capacity to detect relationships, profile a person, suspicious, and there are skills to do that. More people in psychology that are trained to detect certain gestures, facial expressions, you know, those type of things. So traveler profiling could actually help us. Port patrols means open boots of cars, trucks, ships, even sometimes go to flight to check if all people came out of the flight, you know, search ships and all that. These are functions that are not done, which is basically called proactive immigration. Detection of fraudulent documents. We don't have better training techniques for people to do that. Facial recognition, search of conveyances, the management of asylum seekers. The law says when you are seeking asylum, you must declare yourself ready for offense. We have a unit in the department that deals with asylum seekers issues. The coordination of that is not well done by ourselves. Capacity to manage special events and periods. If a port works with 10 people that is allocated for the year, but when Easter comes, the number triples, and you can't deploy people just for that period. Easter, same problem. When is the World Cup, you would employ many people to manage volumes at that time, but when the event finishes, what happens? So that is a very big problem for us in the department. Some posts are managed by staff, I've said that, and in that, the training is not the same, methods of work are not the same, application of the law is not the same. We have had a project at OR Tambo, working with the Cubans to try to improve the security functions of our immigration officers, and that pilot project ended last year in December. A report was compiled, and I think the matter is still under consideration in the department as to how to move forward on that issue. But it's very much important to know that at OR Tambo, where in 2011, we had put in December a completely new management team, I mean a new immigration officer, recruited from the Defense Force. In hardly a year, that new team, we removed all management, they were trained by the Cubans and all that. And they were recruited, these are trained soldiers. We trained them at the Learning Academy in the department, trained them. They received an alert from AXA, the best immigration officers at the airport. We do have problems with the immigration officers at the airport. One of them is uniform. The procurement issue in the department is not related to them. We have not been able to provide them with the uniform. Management, their management is a bit of a challenge, but with all those, it was a pilot that we did, and it was given an award. They were the best people at the airport providing service. Mm-hmm. They were trained on proper security checks, not fast processing of people. That creates tensions at the airport, that our immigration officers are slow, when actually they were trained to do better, proper security checks than just to allow people to come in. So, but it's a project that the committee could at some point get a proper report on it. On information technology, we do have problems. These are operational issues. We have two systems here for IT, movement control system and the APP. I think Mr. McKay can explain it.
Oh, it's the advanced passenger profiling system.
No. That's not it. You do it when you are responding, not now. Continue, Mr. Mamabolo.
Okay. I just thought Mr. McKay normally put it very well when he explained it. But this, the movement control system is a technology that records when a person enters and departs, we record that transaction and the movement control system. All travelers are supposed to be on the system. When did they arrive, which country, passport number, all that. APP, briefly, it's a technology that we work with only with airlines, airports, not on land, on sea. When you board a flight, let's say, from London, they check on the APP. We have an office in Pretoria, head office, where an airline will check. When you have issues when you arrive in South Africa, you wanted criminal, your passport in order, you have a proper visa, should we allow you or not, will you be accepted in South Africa or not? Then the APP says, if you don't meet the requirements, and the APP says, no, you're not allowed to board, you're not even coming to the country. So it's a border basically extended to a foreign country where we check before you board a flight. And almost all airlines have the system, the technology. And it works very well. We used it during the World Cup to detect even some of the hooligans before they could come into the country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's that's what it means. But I think when we come to questions, it will still be used. I must indicate this is an extremely expensive technological system. The department is having issues with whether to continue with it or not.
Mm.
The department does not have money to fund and maintain the system. It's a big problem. The issues about IT are improving the technology, the technological capacity of our system. Our movement control system is supposed to be the heartbeat of national security. It has some weaknesses. We are currently discussing introduction of biometrics that people, when they arrive at port of entry, they should use fingerprints, take their facial faces with a biometric value, so that we can do the proper comparison when people come. Because currently, we use paperwork, and people are able to manipulate the system. So we want to strengthen the capacity of our, particularly the movement control system. The movement control system that we're currently using, actually we have two versions. One, we call it the EMCS, which is the Electronic Movement Control System. It's an enhanced one. We still have an old one, which is only in about 25 ports of entry, and in the next financial year we hope to have expanded the new MCF to all ports of entry. This was the one we introduced during the World Cup. It was designed during the World Cup. We're currently rolling it out. But even the new one, it doesn't have biometrics, and that's what I'm talking about. Like moving forward, we want to be like other countries where they use biometrics to record the movement of people, and this is in the plans of the department.
You have 10 minutes to finish the presentation.
Okay. Yeah, I'll be finished in 10 minutes, I promise. Business processes, this is a big problem. Our ports of entry are not working the same. They apply business processes and standard operating procedures differently. This is a big problem. Infrastructure facilities have talked to this issue, that one of the biggest problems we have is inadequate infrastructure in ports of entry. The stakeholder relations. The stakeholders that operate in a port of entry are the ones listed in the first bullet, Defence Force, SAP, Health, Defence Force and Public Works. Our problem with the stakeholder is vertical and horizontal coordination. Relations between departments in a port of entry is a big problem. Each one has their own legislative mandate, and coordination is very much difficult. What we are showing on this slide, Chair 27, are the projects that we have started in port of entry to try to improve the situation. And I'll just speak to one, baseline research project. This project we started, it is currently being delivered by the CSIR, Council for Scientific Industrial Research. What they are doing for us here is to do a baseline research of all the issues, problems and challenges that we have in Port of Fishing. They've done their research, they've been port compiled, they presented it to Minister. I think it was last week. The reason why we commissioned this, it was to say, give us a proper, well-analyzed research, scientific data about problems in Port of Fishing across the departments and across all spheres. So the committee, the select committee, could actually arrange and get a report on this issue. So we do have all these projects and interventions, and if members were to have clarity on what are we doing to improve the situation, I could go into detail on each one of them. During the festive and upcoming 2013, we have lessons learned and best practices. One of them, Chair, are issues that we have spoken about. One of the biggest problems in ports during festive and Easter is stakeholders do not work well to complement and support each other. The line, the single command and control is not working. Remember, currently in Port of Entry, there's a committee called BVOCC, the Border Coordinating Committee. This is a body that was set up to improve coordination in Port of Entry. But it is not working because it doesn't have legislative mandate. It depends on cooperation. So it's not working very well. You'll have staff maybe doing roadblocks, and out of those roadblocks you could have congestion and so on and so on. So the issue of stakeholder coordination is a big problem. Traffic control, which I spoke about earlier, is the biggest single challenge on that issue. The rest on this slide are the best practices from our management of ports of entry. We are currently thinking of installing cameras. Actually, sitting ports of entry have CCTVs, which are controlled by the South African Revenue Services. We're in discussions with them to make sure that as Home Affairs we have access to those cameras so that we can monitor port of entry and even expand the installation of cameras at port of entry. So that one issue. Currently, for this Easter, which is very much important to report to members, we have recruited from the Defense Force Reserve Force, about 284 members of the Defense Force. Mr. Podigi appointed them as immigration officers. We will be deployed. They were trained. They will be deployed to help during Easter. This is a model that we are going to follow moving forward. Instead of employing people on a contract, then you terminate, we go to the reserve force, recruit, train, deploy. When they are finished, they go back for special events in the festive period. The last point, Chair, is what we call the Border Management Agency. In 2009, State of the Nation Address, members may recall this, the President announced the establishment of the Border Management Agency. This is a body that is intended to replace the current BCOCC, and it is expected that it will have legislative power and mandate to run, control, take over all functions and activities in the port of entry and put them under one roof. Under one agency, one management, one leadership, one command and control. There will be certain functions that are done by SAPS, immigration, port health. All the stakeholders that are in the port, those services, will be integrated under one agency. We hope with this we will resolve all the stakeholder problems, coordination, commands that we have in Port of Entry. This process was managed by State Security Agency. The ANC Policy Conference last year took a decision that the Home Affairs is better place to manage this function. And it was then confirmed that State Security Agency must hand over the entire process of establishing Border Management Agency to Home Affairs. We are currently drafting a cabinet memo to get cabinet to approve that Home Affairs must take effective responsibility for a single authority to manage border affairs. That, Chair, concludes in less than 10 minutes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mamabolo. Ms. Macheu, you can explain the acronyms that we don't understand, starting with the ATP.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, I think Jacob has touched on it. It's the advanced passenger processing system is a system that is that we implemented with the World Cup, or just pre-World Cup, that did the good work that Jacob mentioned. In effect, what it does is it extends our borders. So that when you check in at a foreign port of entry, we are already warned advance that you are coming in. So the system then checks the databases, our risk engine, and we check are you listed in a Interpol database. It's linked. Our risk engine is linked to our police database of wanted persons. It's linked to stolen and fraudulent passports. It's linked to the database of undesirable people in South Africa. So it's linked to databases of different security agencies. And should you be on any of these, they will not board you. The system gives a message that says, do not board. So we are thus able to keep undesirables from the country in the country of embarkation. What we had in the past, Jefferson, before that, we would have people arriving, undesirables arriving at OR Tambo Airport. And when we deny them entry, there's already a battery of lawyers. I don't know if you could call lawyers a battery, but there's already a group of lawyers phoning us and standing with court orders telling us, let so-and-so into the country. And this has reduced this to a very low level where we don't actually have any coming into the country. It's a costly system, Chairperson, but a necessary one in our risk management and in our management of immigration. And we have thought that this system would become self-funding, but Treasury was against the idea of getting the passenger to pay for the service, and had promised that they will give us the money for it, but later decided not to give us the money for it. So we are actually sitting in the department with a situation where we do not have money to actually pay for this service. But we are in talks with the service provider to see if we could have some arrangement or whether they could come down with the money that they are charging us for the system. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you very much for the detailed explanation and presentation. Okay, let me start here from the beginning, then it will go down. Honorable Mubis, followed by Harvard.
Yeah, Chairperson. The first one, I would like to congratulate the department with an honest analysis in terms of where are we, and the quality we're thinking of visiting one or two point of interest, but you have already told us the challenges. You indicated that if we want to get what are the intervention mechanisms we tell us. I think it was necessary for yourself to indicate your intervention. If one reads, if this information went to whoever that plans to do something in South Africa, it can be very much happy and think we are too relaxed in our security. Also, not sharing the intervention might also be good so that they will think we are too relaxed, whereas we have measures to protect our country. However, as a select committee paying oversight, we would love to know over and above what we have indicated, that for instance, the good system that you are indicating, there are problems of it being costly. So if it does, if you have spoken to the service provider and you are not finding favor in terms of decreasing the cost, that's one thing that I think the department must do, what doing with budget, the budget review and all those things. The issue of it is costly but necessary for a country to do it. So we want to hear more prayer from yourself, treasuring the treasury. We may only support you if we see that you are pushing so hard in treasuring the treasury in terms of ensuring that it puts more on this, or you rearrange your budget also, and then see and then shift to this thing. You have indicated the challenge of the the stakeholder coordination. However, you also came up with the question of at the end the Department of Home Affairs has been given. I'm not sure that I'm thinking it wrongly. Given the role of coordinating, if that it's correct how I'm interpreting it, then it means the question of the legislative mandate then has to come either from your side or identify where should it come from, so that as part of our role we can then push for a legislation that can then define who has to coordinate the other stakeholders. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've listened quite thoroughly to the presentation. But I must be quite honest, Madam Chair, I am very much concerned. You know what, I'm a new technology kid. I look TV a lot and I watch Carte Blanche and all these things. Mm. And, you know, Madam Chair, I was looking forward for the department to come and see us, to be quite honest, because South Africa's, according to experts, South Africa's borderline is in a state of collapse. This is not me, this is the University of Pretoria. This is according to professors that are doing studies in this. We are talking South Africans in pull and lift from illegal immigrants, livestock diseases, poaching and smuggling due to poor border security. There are many issues to arise out of the security, a lack thereof. We find smuggling in humans across borders. And it's largely focused on the ports of entry, not the borderline. The borderline is almost non-existent, to be quite honest. You know, as I say, I'm a TV kid, as they say. And I love looking at National Geographic and all these overseas things. And, you know, the Mexican border is 3,169 kilometers between California and Texas. And if you look at everything that's been implemented to look at border security, just in that little small space of the USA, it is unbelievable how they control immigrants from illegally entering Mexico and vice versa. The technology that these people have got, because they understand the importance of border security. Now, Madam Chair, we used to have, and luckily I have not been part of the apartheid system, thank heavens for that. I hope to see myself as a new generation kid. But I must be quite honest. If you look at how the borders controls have been in those days, where there were controlled systems, I really believe for safety of job security in South Africa, safety of business, safety of our own people, we have to start looking at it. We have to invest in our borders. And I believe that the money that we are spending in our country is not channeled to the department correctly. And I really do believe that it's time that the budgets have to be adopted so that our Department of Home Affairs has such a budget to improve these borderlines, to see to it that what we see there of people influxing and not going out gets looked after. We really don't have any controls, and it affects all of us sitting here today. So that is just what I needed to say. Just a small thing, just quickly, economically wise, 100 million rand of illegal cigarettes was seized last year. 100 million rand was seized. Poaching, 330 rhinos were killed. Only 146 was at the Kruger Park because of our borderlands not being protected. Now, this is only a few stats. I mean, if I have to go onto all these sites that I was quickly looking at, I can tell you all these stats and it will take me out. But I just think we come to this state where we know we are in trouble. And to effectively sort this out, we need funding. We cannot do this without funding. So, therefore, I would like to know, what plan do you have in place? And does government understand the problems that you are actually having? Because, I mean, looking at these figures are very nice. But it's worrying figures. We really do have worrying figures. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Father. Honourable Rand. Okay. Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm repeating what the gentleman has asked. I'm sorry, we arrived late. We could not get to know who they are.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Okay. When they were introduced. Yeah. Sir, you know, in Eastern Cape, in the border, in Eastern Cape, Port Elizabeth, in the disaster management building, there is an equipment there that, when somebody is seated inside the building, controlling all over the Port Elizabeth area, Nelson Mandela area, he is able to see what is happening, detecting every movement that is happening within that Nelson Mandela area, that is Port Elizabeth Dispatch and UNIC, sitting in one room, controlling all the, seeing every activity that is happening around the area. I'm not sure if it's the APT system that they are talking about that is expensive, because I think if we can have a system of that nature to control our incoming and outcoming movement in our country, I think we will be able to detect even the officials from Home Affairs who are doing fraudulent things. We'll be able to detect them on such a system. I'm not sure if it's the APP system that is very expensive, but as Honorable Nube has already said, if you can push hard, we can also have a talk with the Treasurer, the Department of Finance for you to be financed more, depending on our relationship with you as a department. And also, the system that shows you that this person is not supposed to board to South Africa. If that person is a person who happened to have been in South Africa before and have done a criminal offence in South Africa, what is your system saying on that person? It does say do not board or arrest that person from that country. Also, that person, when you deport people from South Africa to the illegal people, are you helped by that country that you are deporting to financially and otherwise, or is it on you or on South Africa alone, because that the one who feels the pressure is that upon you alone? Also, the repositioning of security. If a person is getting into South Africa, and you see in your slide, you said there are a lot of people coming to South Africa, but very few that are going back to their countries. Do you have a system of following up that person and find out maybe what makes that person not to go back to his country? Is he, when he came to South Africa, was it for permanent stay or was it for, do you have a system to track that person? And so person, I think this is the second last, the relationship between the SAPS and Home Affairs. Do you have SAPS members that are in the board of entries that are trained by the department, especially those that you say you don't have officials in those entry places where there are only SAPS members? Are those SAPS members trained by you, or are they the normal, are they just people that are under the normal training of the SAPS? Yeah, I think Chairperson, because if I've heard him correctly, he said there are some ports of entry where there are only police and no home affairs officers, which means those ports of entry are at risk of having a lot of people coming in the country without being able to be checked in the right, in the correct manner. Thanks, sir.
Thanks very much. Okay, before that, this is Mr. Mamabolo was making the presenting the
okay.
Yeah, the document, and Ms. McKay to the DTG.
Okay.
Yes, Honorable De Villiers, your hand was up.
Yeah.
Am I mistaken? No. Okay. You'll come later.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. From the department side, a lot of challenges. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. A lot of challenges was identified by the department this morning. And also the problem they have when people are entering our port of entrance. Now, my question here is, I've heard nothing about what is actually on the table to make some improvements on those challenges. Nothing here. And then I want to come in where Honorable Faber is coming to the question that we visited Saudi Arabia, and those people, they are very strict at the airport. Just one example. And sometimes they are rude. We don't want our officials at the port of the entry to be rude, but we want them to be strict so that we can control the situation of illegal smuggling of anything, children, women, drugs, and also people entering the port with the illegal documents or passports and so on. And also nothing in that situation was mentioned this morning, how we will improve on those weaknesses. That is why I am actually interested in to improve on our weaknesses, not only identify them, but next to them, this is what we actually are doing, this is on the table, not to address it in this year, but maybe in the coming year. I know that we will get it maybe in the report or the department, the strategy to improve those problems, but from your side, you must just tell us what actually happening, also in connection with the infrastructure, the roads and so on. And I know that just one thing, the traffic control. Actually, those traffic control must happen just not there at the port of entry on the road, but maybe a little bit further down the road, so that the bottleneck can be maybe solved. That is one solution for the problems of the narrow roads and so on. Honorable Chairperson, the port of entry of South Africa is very, very important. If we failed in controlling those ports, then we will fail our country. More and more people will actually come to South Africa, and we in South Africa will have more problem in connection with the creating of jobs, in connection with access to food, in connection with access to money, and so on. So there will be nearly, say, sometimes will happen that there will be a fight against people, not only South Africans against foreigners, but people of our own land. Just to see that what's happening now in the Doorns. There's a lot of houses happening like informal settlements. It is controlled, but the idea I get there that more and more people are flocking to the Durans and also to the other areas where there's jobs. It is not their fault to go there, but maybe there will be some problems creating by people flocking into certain areas, because those areas can't carry those people in connection with the work. And we will get a lot of problems in that connection. So the only thing we have to do is to speed up our control and the success of our planning in the ports of entry. I can see here, especially from Lesotho, the near borders, we have a lot of people coming through. And I understand most of them are going to the mines to get some work, and we want them also to get work. But don't create problems for ourselves, because we are actually more lenient to the other people to come into South Africa to get some work, and then afterwards there will be a lot of problems for us. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson.
It's working. Okay. Now, Chair, I just have two questions. But I also appreciate the information, because we, for many, many times, we are waiting for this information to understand what is happening in our part of Entry. But my worry, Chair, is on my apology for being late. Maybe some of the questions I'm asking, we've already dealt with it. My apology in advance. So what worries me, when I sit down, I heard the presenter mentioning many times that no capacity function, the staff function below accepted standard. Now my question is, because I heard you saying, repeating exactly that about the capacity of the staff, not that it's not shortage. But what I'm asking the department is that, what are you doing about it in terms of the strategic solution and intervention mechanism to make sure that at least, even if you can recruit how many people, they've got the capacity to do their work. Not like you get in and say they do not have the capacity. Maybe link to that question, Chair, is to ask maybe department, how do they pay their border officers? I don't say how much, but how do they pay them? They pay them lucratively so that they should not be involved in bribes and corruption, or are these low-paid officials who always rely on getting bribes to survive? What is the problem there? Why are they so corrupt? Why do they allow people to get in and accept bribes? So that is another question. On the DLA, well, I also like it, but my problem is that, how will the BMA be structured? I mean, the composition of that structure. How will it be structured? Or do you just put it like, and what is that suffer? Put a CEO, put the staff there, put it there, and said you're an agency, manage the border. So I'm interested in just understanding the composition of that agency. And about its management functions, as stated there, what will be their legislative functions? Because they have management function. Their core function is to manage the border. Does this agency have a legislative function, so that when you have a person heading in a country and you see that this one is illegal, to have the mandate to deport that person, or refuse him entry, or deport him back to the country, or arrest? What other legal function do you have, so that you must not be betrayed by lawyers when you exercise your function? And then lastly, Chair, the funding of the or the funding of this PMA. I just want to check if this PMA relies only on your allocation from the department, or if they have an external or resource people resourcing them to do their function. Because from where I'm seated, I have since 2009 I had all the departments saying their allocation is not enough to assist them to do certain functions. So I assume that if they have a limited function, is there any other external people who are resourcing and this structure of this agency? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Chair. Yeah, the, you know, as Mr. Mabulo was talking, he mentioned the approach in terms of paradigm between the SAPS, we sometimes mind the border, and immigration. The SAPS will be concerned mainly about security issues and so on, and then it may not be trained in terms of immigration issues and so on. And then, but the other thing that I want to know was whether in terms of training, the immigration people, there is a difference, or whether they, or all of them receive the same training. Because for instance, you find the land borders with SADC countries close. They close at 5. And then, so from 5 o'clock, if you arrive there at 5, then you'll have to wait for the following day. But then the airport is open, I believe, 24 hours. Those planes that arrive very, very late at night and so on. So, and then, which already differentiates the treatment between people from the SADC countries and people who come in from England and whatever, whatever. And then, but the other thing, again, is in terms of attitude. The attitude of the people, say, in the Southern border, you find that it is totally, totally different. It's more like policing. And then the attitude of the people at the airport, whether they are very polite, they are used to dealing more with business people and so on, and whites. And then the ones at the Southern border are more used to dealing with poor people who want to come into South Africa maybe to buy a few things to go and sell in their own country. So do these receive the same training, and is there an effort to try to uniformize the kind of service that they give. I think that was mainly my question.
Okay. Here are some few questions from my side. Okay, yeah. I think members, as they were asking questions, they asked the mechanisms that are put in place by the department and all the challenges, what are the challenges we've mentioned, what are the plans that are put in place. And also the issue of corruption, you always hear about many activities of corruption and fraud that are taking place at the borders, where some of the officials of the department are involved here. I hope that the presentation will also touch on that, what plans are put in place by the department to reduce or do away with this fraudulent activities. Also linked to that is the I know Honorable who was from Limpopo, who was here, Honorable Mashamayide, used to tell us terrible stories about what is happening in Great Britain in particular, that there are gangs also there are gangs that are dealing with all illegal things in those borders. What is the department, is the department aware of these gangs, and what is the department doing about that situation? And many questions that I had here, members have touched on them. Let me just ask the two questions. You can respond to Mr. McKay and Mr. Mabuli.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will deal with some of the issues, and Mr. Mamabolo will assist me in some of them. Chairperson, I think to deal with the issue of interventions and what is the department doing about these challenges to us. I think our presentation, when made by Mr. Mamabolo, we spent a bit of time on the challenges so that the house is clear on the challenges. But I think when you got the message of 10 minutes, that is when we came to our solutions and we had to move through the presentation quickly. But our proposed strategic interventions, which is our 8 APEX projects, that is in the presentation, deals with how we are going to manage those challenges that's in the presentation. So if one goes through those projects, and maybe Ms. Mamabolo, when he will just briefly talk to each one of them, you would see that it touches on all of these challenges that we have. So we not only brought the challenges here, but we have and we are thinking around solutions on how to deal with them. Chairperson, if I may just touch on, thank you for the support of the APP, and we will definitely call on you. We are looking at solution, and I am sure that we will find a solution to be able to continue using the APP. Maybe if I could talk around the border management agency for a few. We are still in the process of conceptualizing the border management agency. We are looking at all issues in terms of its legislative framework, how it should look like, what its mandate should be, and it is, we are at an infancy here. We have just, we are in the process, and we will be getting it to the next cabinet, a cabinet memorandum that actually just solidifies the agreement that was held, that was made in Mangaung, that the BMA be the responsibility of the Department of Home Affairs. Once we have done that, and also we will give what we think is a high-level conceptualization of what the border management agency should be doing. And we think that this should be a border management agency with a legislative framework, an agency on its own, and be able to be responsible not only for the ports of entry, but also be responsible for certain parts of the border line, and also be responsible for our maritime borders, and maritime borders up to a certain nautical mile into the sea. So those are high-level conceptualization of what we think the Border Management Agency should be doing. And this is linked to the issue that was raised by Honorable Faber. As the Department of Home Affairs currently, we are not responsible for the borderline. We are not responsible for it. We don't have a mandate to do it. It is the mandate of the House will recall it was the mandate of the Department of Defense or SANDF. Then it was given to the police, and then it was given back to defense. And they are responsible for that. And maybe they would be better placed to say what are their interventions currently in terms of managing the borderline at this present moment. So when we are looking at this new border management agency, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, we are looking at one that would be able to deal with all of these challenges that we are talking about, that would have the necessary powers to arrest, to deport, or to refuse entry, and modeled around the kind of border management agency like the UKBA, the one that UK has, maybe the one that Australia has. We will do some benchmarking to see how it works. We are also looking at the Cuban model in terms of how they manage their borders. So we will really look at extensively at all of these, do a good study, and then come up with something that is unique to South Africa that would be able to manage our borders. Chairperson, with regard to the deportation, who carries the cost? We carry the cost as South African government. If anyone needs to be deported, there is no cost involved at all by the receiving country. And it is a huge budget that we are talking about there. and we are carrying the cost for that. But we should also note that people coming into South Africa need to pay what is called a repatriation deposit. And part of the repatriation deposit goes to funding deportation as well. The exact amount I won't be able to tell you the exact amount that we get from the repatriation account and how it moves over to the other. But we use those repatriation deposits as well for the funding of those that are in our country illegally. With regard to the surveillance system that you are talking about, and in PE, Honourable Member, and I think Jacob alluded to a system that we have at SARS has implemented that we are monitoring all our ports of entry. It is a similar kind of system. It's not the APP at all. It's just a surveillance system that you are able to go into to check what is happening at a port of entry, whether they are queues, how they are managed, the general security of the port of entry. And this is also, this system is also linked to our net joints, where the police, ourselves, and the other security agencies sit so that they could manage the security of those particular ports. We are requesting through Mr. Mamabolo and them to give us access to that system as well so that we can use it as a management system to be able to deal with corrupt activities at the port of entry and to deal with just the management of our queues and processes at the port of entry. And we hope that the system will be rolled out to us very soon. We are in discussions with them. Do we have a tracing system for overseers? Yes, the system is there, but of course we are hampered by capacity. If we have a look on our chapter, we have just under 600 what we call inspectorate officials nationally. The City of London alone has something like over 3,500 inspectorate officials. So if one has a look at capacity, we just to be able to do that is a big task. And we are trying to use technology to help us because we have reintroduced the lending card. We are now getting all the hotels to report to us foreigners that stay with them so that we are able to better manage that. And our minister has prioritized the recruitment of inspectorate officials as well. So we hope that we would be able to deal with that incrementally as we move forward. Are we training SAPS members? Currently, they get a crash course in what we do at the port of entry, but there's no formal training. We have just established, as the House knows, a learning academy in the Department of Home Affairs, and we will be taking that responsibility now to train all our officials at our ports of entry on processes, on not only on processes, but in terms of customer care as well. I think I agree, Honourable Agunya, if you say that if you come in at Owa Tambo and you get through a land port, it seems as if it's two different people or two different departments that are dealing with this, yeah? Just in terms of attitude that people have towards the customer that we get at land port events. We are in process of retraining all our border immigration officers or land port of entry. And we will be rolling out that training program in the next financial year, where we will be training them on all these issues, as well as issues of values that is linked to the whole issue of corruption. It's not so much how much you pay people. People, you can get people that are the least paid, but if they are patriotic, if they have values, they would not be open to corruption or corrupt practice. And this is what we are trying to do in the Department of Home Affairs through our learning academy. It's actually the creation of cadres of South Africa that would frown upon, that have good values and that would frown upon issues of corruption and that would report such activities before it manifests itself in them at a particular port of entry. And we believe if we are going to transform our department, we have to transform the individual officer in the department. And once that happens, we think it will go a long way in combating the current weaknesses that we see within the department. The issues of traffic control, sir, we agree. And I think Mr. Mamabolo will also, yesterday we spoke about his plan on how to deal with the Easter traffic. And he was clear that we needed to deal with congestion of traffic. We need to deal with it at points long before we get to the port of entry. And I'm sure you will talk a bit around that when he gets onto the floor. Chairperson, I think I have touched on most of the issues. I'm sure Mr. Mamabolo, if he will deal with the others if I've left out anything.
Thanks, Chair. Let me try to also answer some of the questions, and thanks for those questions. We recording all of them, they will also help us in our further planning improvement and how to approach issues. I want to try and be generic to the questions, and of course I'll deal with some of them as specific questions, but on interventions, the context here is that in 2011, the previous minister, after having done an analysis of these problems, initiated a cooperation agreement with Cuba. The sole intention of that cooperation agreement was to resolve these issues. there was then the first step, which was the Ouatambo pilot project, to look at what type of a person should work in a port of entry. And the comparison was done with Cuba. We had a team that went to Cuba to understudy the security model of Cuba in ports of entry. So the processes with Cuba are part of the interventions to resolve a whole range of problems. But as I mentioned, the report of the pilot project and how are we going to move forward on it and the whole cooperation agreement is a matter that is under cooperation with the new minister. Once that is clarified and to know how to move forward on that, I think it will help out a lot. The Learning Academy, which also Mr. McKay is currently heading, the Cubans trained about 30 people in different things skills to be able to train our immigration officers and so on. So the whole model with Cuba is one major intervention, which I hope, if taken forward, it will help resolve a number of these issues. and I have to make the point that earlier said, Chair, the ports of entry are neglected and are very complex. And I think that's why I took time on defining the diagnostic, the problem. So the Cuba Ouatambo project pilot and how we take the cooperation forward is a matter that honorable members should know. And it's important to roll up that program because it resolves a whole range of problems. My wish is that it could be taken to the border management agency processes to help us deal with the border security. The second part of interventions come from the APEX project. On your slides, we have indicated what we call interventions. They are about, we have eight projects that we are running. This is the second bucket of interventions. I didn't go into detail about it. The first one, very much important. In 2011 again, there was a discussion in the department about we have 72 ports of entry. There are too many. We can't manage all of them. Manage them better. This is a risk. Let's check what can be closed, what can shut down, and we remain with a few that we can manage better and allocate resources because we don't have all the money in the world to manage ports. That discussion continued. It was a very intense, serious discussion about closure of 18 ports. We then realized, if we close the port of entry and the country and the neighboring state ask us, why closing this port? How are we going to explain? What are the reasons? What's the logic? What's the rationale? People who say South Africa is becoming an apartheid state, is closing out its neighbors, and so on. Then we said, let's initiate a baseline research with CSIR. So this is the first intervention. CSIR, we don't have information on the current problems in ports of entry. We know about them, but they are not documented, recorded, researched systematically. Not that we don't know what they are. Give us a diagnostic of what's happening. Give us a tool to say, if we close a port, what criteria should we use? Western report last week, raised the minister. I think we recommend this project, it will be good for the select committee to call the CSIR Codicil department to come and present on that issue. It tells in detail, far much better than I've done, Chair, what are the problems in the port of entry. In detail, with photos, with clear examples. Out of that, we must develop interventions because it is a good information. So that is the first intervention we did. Will we close ports or not to minimize them? We must use that report. It has just been released. Minister has received it last week. Infrastructure Standard Project is our third project. Why did we initiate this project? Because the Department of Public Works is the custodian of all government facilities. When they go to ports of entry, they want to build an office or improve an office, residences for those who have residences, all this. They don't have scanners that they use to say this is how a port should look like. For example, in Bongo they built a pedestrian facility. The pedestrian facility has been there for long. It couldn't be operated, it couldn't be used because the stakeholders were fighting over it. But it doesn't meet our requirements. We don't want it. Who authorized it and all that? So when you deal with housing, offices, how should a port infrastructure, road leading to the port look like? Shouldn't you have a terminal for trucks only if that site is congested, the port is not congested? Shouldn't you have an exclusive terminal for pedestrians only? Shouldn't you have a terminal for cars, for private cars only, buses and taxis, and the road leading to the airport designed to facilitate that without having congestion? So what should a standard port look like? And then we said, it is one thing to rush building this, building that, without first saying, how should it look like? So then commissioned again on this one we're working with CSIR. Do as international best practice, compare, check China, check countries with big ports, land borders, tell us how should the port look like. Even with airports where our infrastructure look good, our immigration officials are vulnerable. The OR Tambo colleagues, because they are too strict, more often travelers physically attack them, grab them by the neck and all that, when they refuse people entry. So the infrastructure for in Cuba, for example, when you're in immigration officer, you work in a protected environment. There's no contact between you and the traveler. The point I'm trying to make is, in accommodation, what should be a standard accommodation in a port of entry for an official? All these things, we can't just rush to build. And that's why public works take long, because they must first go and research how should it look like by the time they build 10 years on. Now, the problem with describing all these issues, it needs time. This is a matter you can talk about for a week about. So we are commissioning a study, and we are told the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Committee is also faced with the same problem. They have money, they want to do ports, pick up 5 big ones, but how should they look like? So it's a big problem. We want to do that as well to ensure standards. So this is the other project that we are having here. The other one, I'll pick up the last one, because there are many. Okay, there was a question about corruption. This project we call D-Cash project. What we are trying to do with that one briefly is we have realized there's a lot of money flowing in the border because foreigners, when they overstay, they pay. There are a lot of fines and money around ports. So we've used the word D-Cash. What does D-Cash mean? It means we want to take cash out of the port. Every one intervention. You don't solve all the problems. We have started to talk to banks. When travelers come to ports of entry, we want them to use credit cards, all that. We don't want this thing of cash because in certain instances, our immigration officers are seen accompanying foreigners to ATMs. before even a person is admitted, the foreigner wants money to pay and then doesn't know when it means, then the official says, I can show you. Already you have admitted that person. Once you take them to an ATM. So this thing of cash in port of entry, we want to take it out. We are at a point where we are talking to banks to provide the service. But as you would understand, Chair, as you'll agree, which bank do you see that you must follow certain procedures and all that and all that. But we do have a project to deal with that. EFCS, if you look at what we say, it's an environmental pilot project. Currently, when you go to OR Tambo, and I was there last week, we are introducing a project which we are testing. We want South African citizens, when they come in and out at the port, we use their fingerprints which are in the national, part of the National Population Register. Local Home Affairs offices, when you go, they first test whether the ID is yours or not by finger biometrics. We want to use the same system. There are many people who have South African passports if they are acquired illegally. So we want, when you arrive, put your fingerprints, check whether the passport is yours or not. That system we have installed at our Tambo in one terminal. But again, it is pointing out to many problems. if you pick up someone, it shows this person is not their passport. You need to verify with the National Population Register system. The colleagues who work in that system don't work 24 hours. Airports and all of many parts of entry work 24 hours. So it's a pilot we're introducing so that everyone who carries a fraudulent South African passport, we can catch them at the airport. The test is on. We have in Maseru, we want to pilot a project, we call it a trusted traveler project. What is it about? There are two tools and they are not the only ones. When, because they travel a lot, they work in South Africa. They are complaining that we're spending their passports a lot. So there are interventions that we want to introduce to deal with that biometric port of entry and so on and so on. New maritime operating model. The Cubans came in South Africa. They were here 2011. They did a study of Cape Town Harbor, Durban Harbor. They designed an operating model for maritime. How should we work in a port of entry? So this new maritime operating model is a model designed done by the Cubans. We have to implement it. We have started with the recruitment. Who do you recruit to work in a harbor if you have to do patrols? You must recruit somebody who can swim. If you take a boat to do patrols and all those type of things, the caliber of the person that you are recruiting are issues that come up. So we're just indicating that there's so much that we are introducing as initiatives in this project. Then the last set of intervention is BMA. BMA will have legislation. Unlike the BCOCC, where you depend on cooperation, BMA must have an act which brings all these services, and because government officials follow their acts. Department of Health implement their acts, SAPs theirs, Home Affairs theirs, there's no coordination. So BMA is another intervention, Chair, which should be established before the end of, it was supposed to be end of 2014, but we have extended it with another year. When that happens, all the activities in a port will be coordinated under one authority. There won't be many managers at the port, there will be one manager. If you remember the incident with Nigeria where people came, they didn't have yellow fever, Port Health said they can't come in, Home Affairs say, but this could be a problem, Department of International Relations says this will be an embarrassment to the country, security. So you have officials talking and you need one person to say they come or they don't come. So this is a problem. And just to add to what Mr. McKay was saying, there's a big debate again. The relationship between ports and borderline, McKay spoke that, that issue needs to be resolved. So I thought let me just give a generic response to the concern about the lack of intervention. Sorry, it takes long, but yeah, no problem.
No, thanks, Chairperson. On the intervention, on the looking into the agency type of agency that you need to learn from other agencies that are in existence, others who refuse to report or account to the ministry or to the department and claim to be independent. So we need to look into that. The legislation should not give them that independence so that they know they're part of the agency of the department.
the question of the repatriation fee. I think that one is only for those that come legally. So they do that. But then a lot that came illegally, and it means that's got free. But then due to the measures that you are implementing, I think we'll get it. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, on the Honourable Chairperson, on the question as the last one, we just did a study of the communities alongside all our borders. We've done an extent. In fact, it's still a study that's underway. And we find indeed that there's a lot of foreigners that have been living within the borders of South Africa for years. And some of them have brothers or cousins just across in the other country. Swaziland, Mozambique, Lesotho, Botswana. In fact, there's one community in Botswana that wants us to put in a border post there between the two, so that they can come between the two villages. Yes, and there's a chief that lives on the South African side. That's the chief of both communities in this, in Botswana as well as in South Africa. So there's all of those complexities around our land borders, and we are in the process with that study. We are looking at how can we better manage those. Firstly, we need to understand the extent of the issue so that we are able to come up with solutions on how to deal with it. Some of them are policy issues that we will need to see how to look at. Others are practical issues just to see how we can get people to move across, but in a regulated manner across the borders. Because, Chairperson, it is these informal crossings that are exploited by the criminals as well. Because that is where they know they are able now to come in undetected through into South Africa. So we are looking at that with the study of the communities alongside our borders to try to find a solution to that. And once we are done with that, we will gladly bring that, the findings of that report, and also what we are going to do about it, those challenges to the House. Indeed, the Honourable Member is correct with the repatriation fee. It is those that come into the country illegally. And we do, that is why there's still a big chunk of money that comes out of our fiscus that pays for the deportation of people from South Africa. And but we think that with all these challenges that we have mentioned here around our ports of entry and our borderline, we believe that once we fix that, it will have an impact on that as well. Because that is where the weak link is. It is free access into the country. And once we start, we will never be able to yes, I mean, you can build the highest fence, they dig under it. You can use whatever, people find a way of coming into the country. But we can minimize it through good policy and through preventative measures. We would be able to do it. Thank you very much.
No, Chairperson, I don't have a question as such. That's a concern within the area that you are talking about. Estex Strait, there is an area towards Lesotho that is RDP houses. If you divide that area that has got that RDP houses, the other RDP houses are built by South African government. The other RDP houses are in Lesotho, the others are in so the problem that you are talking about, saying you are going to they are going to start the communities, I think it will help us, because really now my next door neighbor in that area is in Lesotho, and we are just divided by the fence that the neighbor or I have built, but he is in Lesotho and I am in South Africa, but we are in the same RDP built area.
So you walk over to the street?
Yes, when you go to the funeral next door to you, it's Lesotho.
No, I don't have a question there, but...
Ja, Michael, ik heb het eigenlijk... Ik heb het eigenlijk... Ik heb het eigenlijk... Where's the copy?
We have to do this.
Honorable Roger, can you lead us on the first day today? Yes.
Okay,
I know why I share one copy.
On the mental health care amendment bill on the 23rd of April, in Parliament, and the pursuit by the Department of Health on the strategic plan and by the vote when it came in.
Okay. Yes, Honorable Whip. Honorable Broad.
Thank you. Now, Honorable Chair, just from what she has read, I really feel when we do threat plans, we need a lot of time. And the briefing on the bill itself needs its own time. So I was suggesting that we split the two. And then splitting the two, I've already looked at the program that we have. We have a free date on the 7th. That's nothing on the this program for this term. Can we shift the briefing, not the stress plans, the briefing of the bill to the 7th? That's my proposal, Chair. Thanks.
The 7th?
Yeah,
7th of May.
7th of May.
Yes, 7th of May, because April is actually occupied with the strategic plan and budget. Mm-hmm. The whole of May will be dealing with it. Yes, Honorable Ruth.
No, Chair, that I don't have the copy. Are you saying briefing on the bill?
Yeah, the first briefing on the bill by the department.
Okay. May I ask? The bill is come from NA. And if it comes from NA, remember that they are...
This is what we have checked, yeah. Yeah, we have taken this into consideration. We will still be within the that year, 6 week period.
Maybe just to be honest with ourselves, we need to give provinces their 3 weeks. Even if we change. Remember that this 6 weeks starts from the day of the briefing. Not necessarily from the day it was referred. On the day they brief us, so we can still maneuver, but we must be careful that our provinces get their 3 weeks as we change.
This one does not convince me then. If she says we must be careful that we give them, and they're saying you have factored all those things in.
No, maybe it's my language.
I know my province ear complaints.
No, maybe it's my language. We are sure. We make sure that 3 weeks is given to provinces. Sorry.
Can I continue,
Pat?
So we change this to 7th of May. All right. Thanks for the question. We go to the 30th of April. There's a briefing in public in the provinces on the mental health bill amendment.
30th of April, yes. Okay, let me allow Honorable Borota again to address that part. Yes.
So, can she repeat herself before she comes in?
According to the draft program we are having in hand now, as much as we have changed the date of the 25th April, that on the 30th April, on the program that we have, there is a briefing and public hearings in provinces on the mental health care the amendment bill. The bill that has been listed for briefing and the 7th.
Yes. No, that's one. As we were discussing, it needs to be shifted. Hence, I'm just checking. Those who have got calendars can assist us to check in 3 weeks after the briefings. We are going to change that, obviously, because we have changed the briefing date. I'm just checking the dates to assist them.
Yeah, Chairperson.
Yes.
May I indicate to say, let us not give provinces dates. Give them the period, not the date. They are very sensitive. Okay. Date
Why did they take? Right. Yeah, they just exactly, and then it's their latitude to take public, pursuing public areas and all those things. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm also of the opinion that we're not going to give the to the province, but we will be able to say to the province the 3 weeks. They must mind the 3 weeks period that they are given for their public hearing and their mandate to come back to the third week ends on the 28th on the week of the 28th of April, of May, 28th of May. So the fourth week starts on the 4th of June would be the fourth week. So we also have to give them the period, the right period. They will say in which dates they are available to do all those processes. Then, Chairperson, so we are moving this 30th April to today. No.
I don't understand when you say we leave the date. What we are saying is, we must have our day on which the mandates must be here, and we discuss them.
Exactly.
And I was suggesting that our date be the 4th of June.
4th of June.
That's my suggestion. Mm-hmm. That it be on the 4th of June. On the 4th of June, we have by the way, on the 4th of June, we have briefing by South African Social Security Agency. Yeah?
Okay.
I don't understand this. Let me look at this. I'm not sure you'll correct me. I don't see Social Security Agency strategic plan budget hold. Is it? Oh, okay.
I was thinking, so as you're talking, avoid any confusion. These councilmen are supposed to stop now. It's uncovered. But even not to pick up.
I was also going to say the briefing from the department can be adjusted within the program. Now that Umasel has come up with the proposal, I think those dates, besides the bill, the other dates that are open now, can't we make them available for the briefing by the department? The available dates that are open now.
Yeah, Chairperson. That morning in the workshop meeting, it was requested that we, in the different select committees, must ask that the departments must give their briefing to us before the 13th of May. So the suggestion from the secretary is very good to shove that one to the 30th of April. It will fit there.
Yeah, the suggestion by the committee is that we deal with all the strategic and budget presentation within April. April.
Before
15th of May. Okay. So, yeah. Yes. Yes. Honorable Zube?
For the company.
Yeah, so that we don't lose out on the sequence. What is the next one, then?
The next one.
So, to the
they
must be
And then the 14th of May, the consideration of because they are all going to be treated now, and the bill is going to be treated.
Yes.
They are
according to the title,
yeah.
So no consideration of negotiating money, then the final money will also be considered according to the title.
Yes, the secretariat will work it out here.
Okay. But on the day of the consideration of the final money of the bill, there is this person, the social development and strategy plan, where can we put this one?
Do we leave it here or do we shift it?
The what?
The briefing on social development. Yes, or of Ruth?
No, I think this one here, the 21st of May. We can take it to the consideration of the negotiating mandate, but it will not be on those 14th of May. Maybe what I would suggest that we just make sure, Matthias, that our first plan, the budget vote, comes before the 15th, and then, but the briefing on the bill, no problem, we can still have it on the 7th, but we will also consider shifting. That's what we can suggest. Although I know it's not going to be easy on all of them to be by the 15th, but let's try where possible.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah, whilst doing that, I'm of the view that she will be looking at, for instance, I'm not sure whether it's Tuesday or Wednesday on the NA, so that we don't put a date that they're all supposed to be at the NA.
Honourable Brotus is Kabilangale, social development. Home affairs now is on the 28th of May. You said they should be finished on the 15th of May, isn't it? Before the 15th. Now what do we do with the home affairs? It is coming in the 28th of May. And budget vote, also. The date should be changed. Yes, Honourable Brotus?
I don't think we will manage to finish everything as expected. Mm-hmm. It's not possible. For instance, if we are able to take social development from the 21st to a closer date, we can also push that one to that 21st. Mm-hmm. So that's what we'll do. But I don't think to say the 15th, maybe we'll be left with one. Mm. That is not presented by the 15th. Mm. That's just a compromise we are willing to take, but it won't be that possible. Let's just make sure that we are closer, but not very far.
Okay.
Yeah.
Honorable Vanto, do you still want to say something?
Yes, Captain. I just wanted to say something for the 23rd of April, because we've gotten... We've said something for the 23rd because we've taken the bill, the briefing of the bill out. So I will go to do the briefing of the health department on that day. Is it only going to be that briefing?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Yes, Sean, your hand was up.
Yeah, I was just going to suggest the key person that you do DSD and stuff on the same day. Because the department, the effort travels at the same time. Mm-hmm. When stuff comes, then the department also comes.
We would love to do that, but it's impossible. It's impossible. You know, the stuff has got its own intricacies.
Yeah.
We have to do it. Just answer, go deeper into that sort of issues.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes,
maybe I was thinking, we have the four partners that are here today. And I mean...
Three. Okay.
If we want them all to be ready for the virus of things, we can do that if we take out a briefing on the vote. And if we start a briefing on the vote of the 15th, which is the next 18th, the 21st, and work probably with the vote from there.
We'll have a problem with that.
Finish all our budget votes from the third on the term to the 15th, that's all four.
Mm-hmm.
And if possible, clean that will be the only business that you'll be with.
No problem. No problem.
Member is not accepted as a proposal here that what we only deal with the business of budget and strategy alone. Finish with it, then we move to go to the bill. Focus on the bill.
We don't have a problem. Because my understanding here is that the 6 weeks starts the day we are briefing.
Mm.
So we are not given any day to finish
by this date so strictly. If that is the case, then
the committee. It's seconded.
Yes.
Any, you need some explanation?
Yeah, Chairperson. My understanding is different from what she's saying. If the department is, if Tina would give the department a date 2 weeks after it was long referred, it will be said it is us that have done it. I have a different understanding on when does the 6 weeks start. Because we normally jump if they have been a vacation. However, it can be referred. It can be referred in March. In March the 6th, and we give the department a break of June. It can would have long been over outside the time limit, according to my understanding.
Members, the question is, when does the period of the 6 weeks start? That's the question. Let's all give Honorable De Villiers, then we come to you.
The person, by the way, Honorable Barroso, right, the 6 weeks start, or the 3 weeks start, from the date of presentation to the committee, not prior to the presentation.
Yes. The only problem that the Honorable Mure has is that maybe it's taking too long before we are briefed and it has been referred. That's one thing I've not verified. But the 6 weeks starts from the day we were briefed. If we are briefed today, it starts counting the 6 weeks. Now, the suggestion here was to say, let's finish up the budget and then later on do that. But if the committee feels is too long a period after the referral, that we can always ask for advice if it's happening. But the 6 weeks, be assured, it's from the date we are briefed. The only problem is us maybe postponing us being briefed. That I'm not sure how it affects the whole thing. But usually they say if we are not forced, we are not given a date on which to finish, like it's not a bill that is so urgent. We can have that, but let's verify myself, and then we'll be sure. But as for the 6 weeks, that one we are, I'm very sure that it starts on the day of the briefing.
Marcel,
is
this
something? Yes. As far as I know, by yesterday, also according to the documents that we got today from the WIPAR, they say it has been referred. Mental health. We don't have the date. Look at the back. It says it's before NCOP. Yeah. So I'm not sure when it was referred, but it says it. Okay. Maybe it's what they thought would have happened and it has not happened. But according to this document, they say it's referred.
You see, she's revealing something.
Which is what?
We're discussing the changing and whatever in the committee. She says the dates have already been approved by the House Chair. That's what she's saying. I'm here there.
Proposals that we have made in the committee.
Yes.
Then
the
to all members. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Correct.
So far we are not going to adopt the circumstances.